Welcome to the 258th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida, and I'm actually back in Southwest Florida. So I finished my visit with Addie, Nathan, and little Caleb, and I'm back home ready to rock and roll. I have to tell you that Florida humidity is higher than Houston humidity. Back on my runs when I got back here, I noticed a big difference in the humidity, so I've had to adjust a little bit, but I'm happy to report after an 18-hour car ride, I got out, my back was feeling pretty good, and I'm back running, and I feel like I'm pretty well recovered, and again, I'm continuing to do the Galloway training program in anticipation of the California International Marathon in December, and so I'm hoping to ramp things up and do a little tempo work now. I'm working on cadence and form and, you know, just, again, bringing the rehab back up and feeling pretty good about it. Continue to do those bird dog exercises and planks and bridges and suitcase carries all are working out to help things. So that's really great. I came home to a yard that looked like I hadn't been here for a long, long time. Garden was somewhat in disarray. Weeds are everywhere, so it's taken me a while to get things back in order. So the backyard garden needs a little bit of tender love and care. Tower garden's limping along. Mango trees are limping along. Avocado trees are limping along. But we'll get them back. It was certainly worth letting them take a little rest so I could go visit my family and see little Caleb. So today I have a special podcast. This podcast is about the Skid Row Marathon and the Skid Row Running Club. It was a documentary filmed by Gabby and Mark Hayes that highlighted the work that Judge Craig Mitchell has been doing with the Midnight Mission in Los Angeles, California. He is a judge in Los Angeles, California that frequently sentenced people to heavy jail times. It's a high crime area. Of course, Skid Row is the homeless population is almost like none other. And when Gabby Hayes came to the United States from East Berlin, she was taken aback by the homelessness in a city that is thriving on one end and so poor on the other. And she decided, after seeing an article in Runner's World magazine about Judge Mitchell, to do a documentary to showcase what he is trying to do to help that population. So we're going to talk to Judge Craig Mitchell and Gabby about the marathon. And, I think it couldn't be more timely given the state of the world and the us versus them things that are going on and, the riots that are happening. And, I think perhaps we're all starting to wake up that's, it's time that putting these things that we kind of the elephant in the room is now way out in the open, and we have to address some things about our justice system and about racial equality. And I just in doing this interview and thinking about all the things that have happened, I started to reflect on my own privileged life. I grew up in Morgantown, West Virginia, which was a university town. When I was in school there, the population of the students were about 22,000, and the population of the town was about 40,000. Since that time, I think the population of the school has gone up to about 40,000. Maybe the town has gone up to 30, 40,000. But it was still, as far as West Virginia goes, it was diverse, but still very homogeneous. The most diverse population was, on the athletic teams. When I grew up in high school, there were a few black kids in the band, a few Asian kids, but and a few Jewish kids, but it wasn't even talked about. It was just somewhat ignored. I knew nothing of the riots of the 60s other than there were bad things that happened in Washington, D.C., I knew of Martin Luther King, but not of the significance of the marches, only that black people had been treated poorly back then and everything was okay now, which couldn't be, more further from the truth. my parents taught me to, you know, to trust people and to be honest, and that's what happened. But it was really rarely ever challenged. You know, I lived in a place where people, you know, looked you in the eye and told the truth, and there wasn't much crime, and there wasn't much need for forgiveness or to look at people as, you know, being diverse or looking at different cultures. The only time I ever felt discriminated against is actually when I came back to West Virginia University Medical School. I was the first woman professor in the Department of Cardiology, and they felt that that was being very progressive in hiring a woman in the cardiology department. There were some women in the Department of Medicine, but none in the Department of Cardiology. But that's kind of where it stopped. They hired me, and you know, the treatment there as far as respect and financial equality was certainly not there. And, you know, it was the first time that I ever experienced it. It was ironic that it was in my own hometown of Morgantown, West Virginia, that that happened to me for the first time. And I started to see things in a little bit of a different light. Even when I was a resident at the University of Pittsburgh, again, the population was not very diverse. My first mentor and resident was a Black woman that I don't know that I would survive without her. She was so kind and educated me and told me what I needed to know, and, you know, was a wonderful intelligent physician that, you know, when I had to change rotations, I thought I'd never survive without her. And ultimately, I invited her to my wedding back in West Virginia, and she asked me if it would be okay for her to come. And I did not understand that, you know, that how, why would it be not okay for a Black woman to come to a white country club in West Virginia? It was actually just across the line in Pennsylvania, but, you know, that just shows how uneducated I was and didn't understand what she had been through to accomplish what she had accomplished in her life and all the adversity that she'd had to endure to get where she, you know, she was. And, you know, I regretted her having to feel that way then. And certainly, you know, 33 years down the road, things like that are still happening. And it's really, you know, atrocious. There's a lot of great quotes in this podcast from Judge Mitchell. And I added a few of the quotes from some of the runners of the Midnight Running Club. But when I was getting ready to do the bio for this and the intro for this podcast, I came upon a message that Judge Mitchell had just put up on Facebook. And, you know, one of the things that he encouraged that, you know, how we would get past what's going on now, it's not really pointing the finger of who did what or who didn't, but we need to come together as one. You know, it is us or it's we, not the other person or, you know, another culture. But we need to be, we need to put we back in our society and us back in our society and look at our neighbors as neighbors and not those people, and look at other people as our brothers and sisters. And I think that was a great message that he portrayed in that that little Facebook post. If you want to, and I'll put it at the end, and I'll put it in the show notes, but the name of the marathon is Skid Row Marathon. They have a website, skidrowmarathon.com. They're on Facebook as Skid Row Marathon, Twitter, Instagram, Skid Row Marathon. You can buy the DVD. You can watch the movie on Prime. You can buy the DVD and get a t-shirt on their website, and the donations will go to Skid Row Marathon. Gabby Hayes is also to be praised, her and her husband, Mark, for what they did with this movie. It was a film out of love, and they're still, Gabby's still running with the Midnight Mission. She grew up in East Berlin when it was communist, so she certainly knows oppression and what it's like to be in need. but they didn't realize just how powerful this movie would be. And, you know, thanks to them, the Midnight Mission Running Club, or the Skid Row Running Club, is funded now so that they can travel and do these international marathons and get more people involved and get more runners involved. After seeing and talking to Judge Mitchell, I'm thoroughly convinced that running is more important now than ever. I've proclaimed it on this podcast for a long time that, you know, I think running is an excellent way to not only heart health, but mental health, whether you suffer from depression or anxiety. I think it's a wonderful way to bring people together. I've had some of my best talks on long runs with running buddies. But I think it's also a really good way to tackle addictions, whether it be food addictions or substance addictions or abuse. And, you know, we talk a little bit about maybe it should be the 13-step and its 12-step program that AA has, not AAA, but AA currently does a 12-step program. And I guess in the East Coast, there is a couple AA groups that make running a part of their recovery. So I would encourage everybody that listens to this podcast to go see Skid Row or go rent and watch Skid Row Marathon. And share it with your friends. And please share this podcast with your friends, because I think it's very uplifting in a time of such diversity that can, you know, help bring us together. And I think running does that. You know, when you're out running a marathon with 20,000 of your best friends, you know, in one of these big marathons, you're all one and everybody's happy. I remember one of my friends that came to watch me in the Marine Corps Marathon and stay with Addie. It was the first time that she'd ever watched a marathon, and she couldn't believe the positivity in all the people, you know, strangers. And I've said it before, strangers cheering for strangers, strangers encouraging other people, and just being, you know, a positive group. And I think that's what running does for people. So I intend to take this further. We're doing the marathon in March 1st, Treasure Island Marathon. I'm hoping to get as many people to join me and to build some sort of a running community with that goal in mind of that Treasure Island Marathon. So if you have any desire to come to Florida and run a marathon or get in touch, you know, how you can start running. Again, I don't think there's any age where you can't start running. I don't think there's any level of disability or weight or anything that you can't start running. You have to start slow and build up, but there's a way. And I think everybody's life would be enriched by it. I know mine has been terribly enriched by it. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. Again, it's one of my favorites. I know I've said that before, but my hat goes off to Gabby Hayes and Judge Craig for all the work they do and the kindness that they continue to display in their community, despite people being very different from them. So I've learned a lot. I've thought a lot about it. I hope you do too. And please enjoy this podcast and this interview with Judge and Gabby. I am honored to have Judge Craig Mitchell and Gabby Hayes on the podcast today discuss the Skid Row Marathon. This is a fabulous film documenting the work of Judge Mitchell, not only as a judge, but as a fellow human being. It's a story of hope and compassion. It's something we all have in common, and I think today it's very important to look for things that bridge us together as opposed to tear us apart. Whether it's a love of running, art, music, or it's just the desire to decrease suffering in the world. I related immediately to the judge when his family says that he needs to run. I shared that need to run to decrease the stress in my life. The film also brought me back to the fond memories I had running the Rome Marathon. That was my first marathon, and I did that marathon to raise money for the American Diabetes Association. And what came out of that marathon was my way to bring running and the joy of exercise into my medical practice. So I could not be more excited to welcome filmmaker Gabby Hayes and Judge Craig Mitchell to the podcast. Welcome, both of you. How did this get started, Gabby? Whose idea was this to do a documentary about Judge Mitchell?
We just read an article in a newspaper one day on a Sunday afternoon, you know, and that was actually 2013, roughly. And we were just very intrigued by, you know, the judge and what he was doing, and having been living here in Los Angeles for so many years, we just couldn't believe the homeless problem. I mean, I'm coming from former East Germany, mm-hmm. and I had never seen homelessness like that before. I mean, we had maybe some drunk people in the street, but I mean, not much like this. And so, and we lived downtown at the time, and we were just couldn't believe it how bad the situation is, and how people would just, you know, be laying on sidewalks and living in tents, and felt very helpless. So when we read this article just before the LA Marathon in March, we thought, maybe this is really interesting. I'm a runner myself, and maybe we can meet the judge and see if there is a story there.
Fabulous. Judge, have you always run on Skid Row?
I have not, no. I started running on Skid Row, almost 9 years ago, mm-hmm. when one of my former defendants was released from prison and came back and asked me to come down to Skid Row to the Midnight Mission, where he was paroled. And that is what got me down to Skid Row initially. And the president of the mission asked if there was something I could do to contribute to their program. And it dawned on me that since I really saw the benefits of running in my own life, I wanted to share that with people who were in recovery.
You said early on in the movie, you know, you talked about what you do as a judge, and the movie starts with you handing down a very lengthy sentence. And, you know, I can only imagine how that must weigh on you. And, you know, you also alluded to the running helps you deal with, you know, your day-to-day life. And I share a similar thing, you know, running helps me deal with, you know, heart disease doesn't always end well. And so running helps me to cope with that and to give me hope that I can help other people. But when you start running with these people, and one of one of the things that you said, it was not a direct quote, but you said, you know, one act does not define the person. And I wonder if, you know, after you started with the mission, did that change how you looked in the courtroom? I mean, did that kind of pull a little bit? Would that make your job, your day job harder?
I think it made me better informed as a judge. I don't think it really made it harder, no, because if you understand the backstory that results in someone ultimately facing criminal charges, you're in a better position to address that person's needs, you know, in whatever capacity you are able to do that. I mean, we have programs in Los Angeles. Believe it or not, we don't have to send everybody to prison. We can send them to a mental health treatment program. We can send them to veterans court. We can send them to drug court. So if you really understand a person and what is behind the criminality, your options increase.
You know, I guess for the, you know, for somebody that's viewing it, I've started running programs and try to get people. One of the things that I did through my practice when I started doing marathons is I started framing my medals and T-shirts in hopes that I would get people interested in running, and it never worked. ironically, now that we're doing more of a wellness program and doing more nutrition focused and exercise programs, we do have some people that I'm planning on taking on their first marathon in March. But as you know, you get a lot of people that say this is a great idea, but then getting people to show up and do it. So how do you, I find sometimes you got to have some skin in the game. So how did you get, who all signs up for your program, and, how do you keep it going? Keep them showing up?
Well, people on Skid Row at that point in their life oftentimes are very isolated. They're estranged from their family. They've probably lost several jobs. Relationships have been destroyed as a result of their addiction or incarceration. And so to provide them an opportunity three times a week to connect with people that they can have a meaningful relationship with, that is a big draw in and of itself. As you know from having watched the movie, another huge draw is the fact that if you do show up on a regular basis, regardless of how fast you are, you will be going on an international marathon every year. And, we're planning on going to Myanmar in November. And, not many runs pass where, are we still going? Are we still going? Am I on the list? So a combination of factors really make the guys show up.
What was the idea to go to Ghana for the first, or to actually even take on the challenge of taking these people to a marathon?
In raising my own children, I understood that, when we were here in Los Angeles, particularly during their teenage years, they may not have wanted to listen to their daddy too much. Okay, but there is a strange phenomenon that when you get on a plane and you arrive in a country where nobody speaks your language, it pulls people together. And it really fosters a deeper relationship. And that was the reason behind making an international marathon a part of our program.
Wow. Very, very nice. Yeah. I mean, it was Ghana, and that was great. And then, of course, Rome with, I believe it's David is the artist, right? That you
correct.
Really want. And you kind of picked that marathon for him to some degree?
We did. And we followed up. We've done a marathon in Vietnam.
Wow.
We took 44 runners to Jerusalem and Jordan. We just got back from Ecuador and the Galapagos Islands. So they've seen a lot of the world.
And the fundraising for that, initially you were doing that all on your own.
Pretty much so, yes. There were about three of us that dug into our own pockets to make that possible. And luckily, with the release of the movie, and the creation of a nonprofit, I have a little bit more spending money myself at this point.
To be able to fund, because that was going to be a question, is how do you fund? I mean, I noticed people had, they had decent shoes to wear, so there's a little bit more into it. I mean, running doesn't require a whole lot, but it does, a decent pair of shoes certainly helps and can be kind of costly when you're doing marathon miles.
And we've had a donor from the beginning who, whenever we plan on running a marathon, he meets us at the running shoe store in Pasadena with his checkbook, and he buys shoes for everybody.
Oh, man, that's really nice. That's
incredible generosity.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like that, you've got a team. And any other judges or lawyers that are involved in the program now, or you're still the lead guy?
Well, I'm still the lead guy, but there are other lawyers who are mentors in the program, and they're absolutely essential because, you go out for your long training runs, everybody's got a different pace, and what we try and have happen is that we'll have a mentor pair up with one or two people who are in recovery, and those priceless conversations take place in that dynamic.
It's nothing better than a long run to get to know somebody.
To hash things out. You've got it.
Yeah. It's, you know, I training buddies over the years doing marathons, you really get to know, you become related to the person that you train for a marathon with, I do believe.
And it's, I think it's even, more present with people who are in recovery, because part of the 12-step process is you are encouraged to just lay it on the table, be honest about what has brought you to this point in your life.
You know, I mean, the insight from the runners, you know, Ben, the musician, you know, he said, show up and good things will happen. And, you know, he's a phenomenal, they're all phenomenal stories. I thought, you know, from 300 pounds to, you know, running a marathon and, you know, continuing to do what he did. And, you know, that was very good. And, but I think, you know, Raphael, the story behind, you know, Raphael talking to the kids and, you know, when he didn't get his passport, saying that you just have to be patient. And it's like, man, you know, how many people on the outside or people that, you know, we privileged people are not patient over anything. And this poor guy spent all these years in prison and he was still willing to be patient to get this passport.
Well, I think when you wait 28 years to get a release date, you learn patience one way or the other, whether you like it or not.
I guess so. That's a hard lesson to learn for a lot of us, you know? So I guess if you thought about that every day, at least it's not 28 years, right? You can just say at least it didn't take 28 years. Wow. It is great.
That's right.
So you're, how many people are running right now, would you guess, in the group?
We have probably 40 to 50 active members, and probably those who join us on a periodic basis, probably double that number.
And you still have the rule, if you break parole, then you're gone.
Say that again, please.
You had a rule that, right, if you broke parole or you didn't, you know, that then they couldn't be part of the club.
Well, essentially, I mean, no. The only thing that sort of causes people to fall by the wayside on a temporary basis is if they relapse. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, we're not going to put somebody on an airplane that has once again begun their drug use. I mean, mm-hmm. that would be insanity. And we've had people on the eve of international trips relapse, and we burn a ticket. But once they regain their sobriety, they are always welcome back.
Yeah, it's a process. It's a long, hard process.
Right, and anybody who's involved in recovery understands, you know, a person is going to relapse normally multiple times before they're able to sustain sobriety.
What would you, you know, if you had to think, you know, back before you had this program going and, you know, the traditional, you know, AA groups and, you know, counselors and things, what, you know, compared to that, do you think that the running group has really made, does it select people that this helps, or, you know, do you really see, do you wish if you could say, Judge Mitchell says that all AA groups should have a running component to it. Do you think that would be another part of the 12th, make the 13th step being a running program?
Well, what is interesting, you've made that observation. There are actually recovery programs largely on the East Coast that mandate running in order to be part of their recovery program. So they have incorporated that, so to speak, 13th step. You know, all the research indicates that what is going on in the brain when you're running is absolutely conducive to suppressing your desire to take illegal drugs. So, I mean, it's a beautiful marriage between a 12-step program and a running program.
How are you holding up?
I have to remind myself that I'm 64 years old, and, you know, there's going to be a little bit more talking back from my body than there was when I was 40. You just accept it.
There you go. You're just a child. You know, I live in Southwest Florida and 64 is still pediatric population. So
I'll keep that in mind.
Especially for a runner, you know, especially for a runner. Yeah, it's hard. And injuries in the runners, how do you all deal with those?
Well,
do you have a doctor or anybody that helps participate or sees them? Or
we actually have a physician's assistant. We also have a couple of nurses that run with us. So, and we do referrals to treatment facilities when need be. So, no, we've got that addressed.
Because you're taking people that, I think you said at one point during the movie that you run even faster if you didn't smoke.
Well, a lot of people who are early on in recovery, they replace illegal drug use with cigarettes. I wish it wasn't so, but it is.
I remember when I was doing the Paris Marathon, there were more people just standing around waiting, starting smoking. And it's like, people know this is not so good. It'd be a little scary. I mean, as a physician, I see, you have a lot of different size people. And of course, I'm sure the nutritional background is, what these people have to eat is not necessarily the best a lot of times. And so, There is the risk of underlying disease. I mean, running certainly, we know people that run and that are endurance athletes, regardless of their cardiac condition, do better than people that don't. However, you can only outrun so much of your physiology sometimes. So there is some risk, to the people there. And so, again, kudos for it. You got to start somewhere.
You do. And, for the runners who have a physiology that might not match up with an elite runner, if they're coming in at 5.5, 6 hours, nobody is talking down to them.
No, it's the finish. The finish is the win. That's absolutely
right. True.
Are you still doing the 5Ks to raise money and things like that around the area?
Actually, no. With the release of the movie, there have been so many generous people around the world that donate to our program that's not necessary.
Wow, that's fabulous. Well, hats to you, off to you, Gabby and Mark. Did you see that coming, Gabby?
Sorry, Mark's not here. It's just me.
Oh, sorry. Just you. Okay. Gabby, did you see that coming as far as the impact that you're actually having with this movie?
Actually, no. I haven't anticipated such a great response from audience worldwide. It's like people all around the country, in Europe, in Australia, have been responding to this film. And I mean, it's not a local problem. You think it is, an LA-based, United States-based problem, but actually it's not. I mean, people have to, face, homelessness, people with a drug addiction in their family circle or friend circle. So the response is amazing.
And it couldn't be more timely.
Yeah, it can. That's right.
It really couldn't be more timely because, to me, it shows that, just recognizing a human has worth, the basic human decency, extending human kindness goes so far. And I think, Judge, what you do is just, just being out there and accepting people for what they are. It goes to say how much just that helps, regardless of what else you're doing. It's just walking through the door in the morning and that handshake, you can see the people's face light up. Mm-hmm. So it really.
Well, one of the very telling remarks from the president of the mission, he said, essentially, we're in the self-esteem business. Okay, a person, oftentimes up with an addiction because their self-esteem is in the gutter. And for myself, other professional men and women in the community to get up 3 times a week at 4 o'clock in the morning to be down on Skid Row by 5 o'clock, that sends a very powerful message to people, that you're worth enough for us to, you know, make this such a priority in our own lives. And it's essential.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it just goes to show you, it's almost this, you know, you don't need a bunch of bureaucratic zillion paged documents on what should be done. It's just a little human kindness and a little attention goes a long way.
It does.
So, any surprises, you know, any side stories that we didn't get to see in the movie of things that happened to you along that run in the morning, those morning runs? It couldn't have all went that smooth.
I mean,
there have been some dicey moments.
Yeah. And also the challenges, I mean, having filmed this over 4.5 years, you have been following several subjects and you didn't know who would make the, you know, who would have a great story, because it's not a scripted version. It's a documentary and you have to go with the flow. And we had many other people at the beginning, runners, that we thought would make a great story. Like one guy was a stockbroker, his father had millions of dollars and he was super rich, and he wound up at the Midnight Mission and he relapsed and he, you know, drank a bottle of vodka in bed, and then he had to be, you know, detained in the mission. He couldn't come out. And he was practicing, I remember, he was practicing for the LA Marathon running in the gym. Like, I think like 200 loops in the gym. And unfortunately, he disappeared. And, you know, and so you learn, at the beginning, really hurts you, especially me too. I mean, you feel like the judge is putting so much effort into, you know, keeping people clean and having discipline of running and training them. And then all of a sudden they don't show up anymore. And you're kind of hurt. It was very personal at the beginning. And I just didn't know how to deal with it. I was really sad, but then you know, that's part of, you know, the problem that, you know, relapse has, that you know, it can go so fast. If something happens that, you know, sparks something and you're back out on the street.
Doctor, I mean, yes, are there backstories that have been, as Gabby said, really difficult to deal with? You know, methamphetamine is probably the drug of choice right now down on Skid Row. Mm. And I haven't encountered a more insidious drug in my life. And there have been runners that, you know, you take methamphetamine use to a certain point, there are going to be profound physiological changes, and they're not good. Meth-induced schizophrenia has affected some of our members to the point where they cannot not run out into traffic. And so we've had to say, you can't run with us anymore because you're going to end up getting killed. We had another young man who was so frustrated with his inability to stay clean off of meth that he ended up committing suicide. And so, yeah, as Gabby says, that's the hardest part, is to really have a very committed relationship to another person and watch them spin out of control and you can't do anything to stop it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that have to be very frustrating. You have to celebrate the wins, right?
You do, you know, and you just have to, in a very pragmatic way, understand what you're up against.
And you saw it with Modi's story. I mean, I think that what you have seen on screen was maybe just once, but he has relapsed several times. And I mean, he could have put more of those segments in, but he didn't. But we always were there for him, and he came back and he looked great when he was sober. He was strong. I mean, you saw him when he was drunk. I mean, he looked awful.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, you know, that's why, you know, so you do 3 times a week running. So you do do you go down and do the long runs with them, or?
Yeah, I do. I do all the runs.
Okay. So, yes, he did. So somebody's still on it. Yeah. Cause I mean, you have to all, that's the other thing is that you have to make sure that they get, you know, you talk to them about, you know, you have to have the mileage and it's not like you can cram for a marathon. And so your success rate seems to be pretty good as far as if you can get people to show up, then they do the mileage and they finish the race.
They do. And once a year we actually do the LA River Run, which is 54 miles.
Wow. So again, it goes back to my point that, you know, there's a, I have a friend that his name's Mark Cucuzzelli, he's a physician, but he says that you're too old not to run, that anybody can run. And you're a testament to that as well. You're taking all shapes and sizes and physical abilities and addiction, and they're crossing the finish line of a marathon. So it's, you know, hats off to you.
They are. And, it, you know, and the great thing about the movie is, you know, you just, particularly after their first marathon, their sense of accomplishment, their renewed confidence in their own ability to set a goal and achieve it, you know, makes it so worthwhile for me to make this investment.
Yeah, I think, you know, even for most people, finishing a marathon can be a life-changing experience. And for someone that has been so down on their luck, or, you know, had so many negative things happen to them, I would guess that it would be life-changing if you can get people to that finish line.
No, it is.
It's a fabulous movie. Like I said, I watched it three times. I watched it with my kids, and you know, I mean, I never watch a movie again. But it's just so uplifting, and you know, it's real. I think that's the best thing I like about the movie. It's real. It's not woe is me, and you know, then things. You know, it is, the struggles are real. You didn't hide anything. They're the real stories of people that have really struggled and continue to struggle. And but in the end, you know, again, the message is there. If you just give people the benefit of the doubt, and you know, I think it's wonderful. You know, the diversity that is shown and respected, and it's a message that we all have to hear now, especially I think that, you know, we can all be very different and go out for a run together. And, you know, do all kinds of things together. We don't have to be the same.
Well, and that's the great thing about the running community. I mean, you know, everybody, for, you know, no one is interested in the fact of how many years of education it took me to get where I am or how much I earn or anything like that. You know, if you can get someone who is living in a shelter who posts a better time, they have bragging rights over me. And it's just a nice way to, you know, to equalize everybody.
Yeah, I think it's great. Well, you know, we certainly, you know, I certainly want to promote it on this podcast and, you know, any place that I can in my running community, and, you know, look for support. And you say the next, when is the next marathon? Myanmar in November.
Myanmar will be in, we leave Los Angeles November 24th. We'll to run the Bagan Marathon, which was the number one internationally rated marathon in runner's world. And wow. I've run it, yeah. You know, I have run it before. And if you haven't been to Burma, you know, at some point in your life, if you're able to make it there, it is a magical place. And I can't wait for our runners to experience it.
All right. I'll have to put it on the bucket list.
There you go.
That sounds good. So how many merit do you keep track? How many have you done?
Probably 50, 60, somewhere in that ballpark. I didn't start running until I was about 40.
Don't be humble. But that 70s.
I've lost count.
Gabby's keeping. Yeah, I used to keep a record, and then it got to the point where, you know, I go around the states, and then, you know, I've done a few international marathons, and then you kind of lose track, and he's like, oh well, I've done more than something. But that's fabulous. Well, that's great. I think that. It, you know, again, I can't say enough how I appreciate what you do and respect what you do. And, you know, I hope you keep running to your 100. I hope to, you know, see the sequel, Gabby, you'll have to do when Judge Mitchell runs his runs at 100, his marathon with whoever.
That's right.
I may be, doctor, I may be knocking on your door for a little professional advice the closer I get to the three digits.
Yeah, you know what? Anytime you can email me about anything, I might try to talk you into eating more plants when you run. But, you know, anytime I'd be happy to. And even if you did have any questions about your runners or they needed any help, I'd be more than happy to volunteer to help you out.
That's wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah. Some runners have been, doing a better diet now anyway, which is good. They're eating more vegetables and that's good.
It usually leads that way. You know, once you start running, you know, you need to make it simpler on yourself, you know, so it's easier to run lighter. We always laugh in triathlon, you know, people spend hundreds of dollars for a new pair of pedals, but if they just didn't eat the pizza the night before, they'd have been just as light, you know, and so it's the same thing. And Gabby, are you actively, what are you training for now?
Not particularly anything, but still keep running with the running club, even though we're finished with the movie, and it's part of my life now. So,
Gabby runs at least 6 days a week. Yes,
on my own. Yes. But I mean, with the club too, like once a week or something
nice.
Like that.
Nice.
We were on hiatus. I mean, we just ran. We couldn't run because of the pandemic. And we just did our own little runs with little groups and stuff, so which was great too. But it was hard, I think, for everybody in recovery, just not to have that, you know, feeling of being together and being this family was really hard, right, Craig?
It was.
So are you back now running?
Actually, this is the first week that we have resumed our regular three times a week running schedule during the pandemic. What was great is the Midnight Mission is probably about a mile from my courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the runners from Skid Row actually during the pandemic would meet me for my lunchtime runs because I run every lunch. And so maybe, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 of us would run at lunchtime. And that's how we sort of kept the group, you know, tight during this whole social distancing period of time.
Great. Yeah. I mean, that's been a tough time. Well, I really appreciate you taking time to speak with me. I'm honored to speak with both of you and, you know, keep running.
Thank you. And I wish you the same. And, you know, thank you for investing the way you have in our community.
Maybe we'll see you at one of the marathons.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I'll have to keep in touch, Gabby, and you have to give me the schedule where you know, I might just show up someplace, you know, and who knows.
Yes.
All right, take care. Thank you both for the time.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with filmmaker Gabby Hayes and Judge Craig Mitchell. Two fabulous people, two people to be admired. If you have any questions, I'll certainly link skidrowmarathon.com. It's on Instabook, Facebook, and their website. You can go get a t-shirt. You can get the DVD. So check that out. If you have any questions, you can email me at jamie@drdulaney.com, DocTorDulaney. Love to hear from you. Go over to the website, drdulaney.com. Check out what we have to offer. Maybe you'd like to run with us or get some running information or nutrition information. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. See you again next week.